You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you. We appreciate you being here with Chip Souza, Matt Jones. Arkansas, Tennessee coming up at the end of the week. Vols ranked number 4. The Razorbacks, of course, coming off that tough loss to Texas A&M the other day down in Arlington. Chip, you were sitting right next to me during the game.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Too many turnovers. It just seems to be the story of the season. You just, you know, they are not good enough to overcome those kind of things. Their margin of error is very razor thin, and they're just not good enough to overcome turnovers like that, especially fumbles inside the 10, you know, things like that. The interception wasn't so bad. It didn't really lead to anything. It wasn't so bad, but the fumbles, they were credited with 4 fumbles. I don't know where the 4th one came from. I only counted 3, but I think there might have been a play on the sideline where they were given a fumble that might not have actually been a fumble. But anyway, it doesn't matter. They lost the ball twice in fumbles, once on interception. They just can't keep shooting themselves in the foot like that.
Last year, and we talk about all the times that they were close last year, they were really good at not only forcing turnovers, but turning those into points. I mean, they had, I don't know how many pick sixes last year. It was the most they've had in many, many years. They had a fumble recovery they returned for a touchdown against Florida that was real key in that game. The BYU game, Isaiah Satania had a punt return touchdown. I know that's not a turnover, but it's a non-offensive touchdown. They're just not getting that this year. And like, you take away the Auburn game, I mean, Auburn, they're committing turnovers like crazy. The OU game the other day basically ended on a pick six. You take away that game, and Arkansas's not forcing turnovers at all.
No.
And now you're going to start playing teams that are better teams. I don't know how good Tennessee or Ole Miss or these teams are at taking care of the ball, but they're probably not in the position that they're in right now if they were, you know, turnover prone. And so they got to figure out some ways to win the turnover battle, because I think in order for them to pick off one of these teams, whether it's Tennessee or LSU or Ole Miss or Texas here at home, maybe they can get a Missouri on the road. We'll see. But they're going to have to win the turnover battle, and they're probably going to have to win it by multiple turnovers.
Well, I mean, it's what they did against Auburn. What, they got 5 turnovers?
5-2.
In that game. I mean, you're not going to get 5 every game, but you got to at least be even in the turnover ratio. You got to at least be even to give yourself a chance, because they're just not good enough to overcome those kind of mistakes. They're just not.
It feels like a lot of people are jumping off the wagon here at the end of September as we move into October.
When you take a look at the schedule that's ahead of them, it is daunting. There's no question about that. But, you know, you take a look at a Kentucky team, you know, that gets a win against Ole Miss, a game that nobody thought they could win, but they did. Is Arkansas capable of that? Absolutely they are.
The offensive numbers in the SEC are not real strong this
year. No, no. A&M not a good offensive team.
No.
At all. Kentucky's not. Auburn is not.
OU is not.
OU is not.
I mean,
not.
We can go on down the list. Yeah. There's a lot of offensive struggles. I guess where I'm going with this is that I don't know. Maybe the defenses are better. Maybe the offenses just aren't as clean this year. I do wonder, you know, offense is all about timing and rhythm and execution, and I wonder about how transfers play into all of this.
That's exactly right. What are the three best offenses are probably Alabama, Texas, and Georgia. What do they all have in common?
Georgia's debatable because they're struggling too.
But
they've got players who have been together for a while.
Right. But the common denominator there is they've got quarterbacks that have been in that system more than 1 year.
And linemen.
So that makes a big difference. Is, you know, bringing in different quarterback every year out of the portal and trying to build your team through the portal and vast numbers of players in the portal, you don't have that continuity and that chemistry. And I think football, above any other sport, needs continuity and chemistry to know how to handle adversity together.
And maybe line play more than any other position. Somebody was asking me about line play this morning, and I kind of made an analogy that you can probably relate to, because I know you had 3 boys. We got 3 kids at our house, 6, 4, and 3 years old. And I said, you know, the best lines are the ones who have been together for a long time, where they know what the person that's next to them are going to do. I said, and it's kind of like whenever you're married and you're trying to get the kids out the door, and it's like, okay, you take care of the toothpaste and you take care of the hair, and I'm going to get the lunchbox, and I'm going to get the backpack, and oh no, here comes the blitz, somebody yelling, I got to go potty. You just kind of know, it's like, hey, she's going to take care of this, I'm going to take care of that. And you know what the person, you know, and you're playing 2 against however many kids you have, and you don't see that with offensive linemen now, because none of these guys knew each other until February or March in a lot of cases, if even then.
Well, and not having Kudus all year long. I think that's just been a big big loss for them. That's, you know, they were, their line is better.
They were excited about him.
Yeah, their line is better, but losing a guy like him, again, it goes back to they just don't have that affordability to lose a guy of his ability along that line, you know, and that's something that we haven't talked a lot about, but I think that's just been a huge loss for them.
Sam Pittman had this to say about line play yesterday. This was actually, it's kind of, he's got two thoughts here. One is about the fumbles that Talen Green had down at Texas A&M, and then he kind of transitions into talking about the pass protection.
If we just hold on to football, we'd be a really good football team with all the problems that we've got to correct. The second one, I think we've had so many pressures that we've got a lot of problems. We've got a confidence problem. We have a quarterback that's not confident. There's times when he can stand in the pocket that there is one there. There's times when he stays in the pocket and he gets hit.
And so, to me, whenever he says that he's got a quarterback with confidence problems, I mean, the red lights start going off.
Yeah, yeah. Does it seem to you, Matt, that Talen plays better, that he passes better and plays better when they move the pocket and he's not –
whenever he's on the run, whenever he's outside the pocket. I was listening to somebody talking about this the other day, and they said that they think that he sees the field a lot better when he's outside the pocket than whenever he's inside. But – the pocket breaks down so quick that I don't know that you can really make much of a determination on it. You know, we mentioned this stat yesterday that he's been pressured 80 times this year. The next closest pressure in the SEC is 49 times for the Kentucky quarterback. The only quarterback who's been pressured more than Talen is Shador Sanders at 81 at Colorado.
Yeah. Even the long touchdown pass to Tesla, he was under pressure.
Yep.
And you know, I was watching it kind of unfold, and you're like, okay, he's going to take a wait. It's kind of open. He's going to be able to run for it, which he could have ran for a pretty good gain if he had wanted to. But props to him. He kept his eyes upfield and found Tesla behind the defense, and he made a great play. But it just seems to me like he is more effective that way. I don't know if his passing accuracy is a whole lot better that way, but it seems like he's just more confident moving.
I think he's pretty accurate on the run, and he can make that, because the play that Tesla made, that's with Green rolling to his left
and throwing back across,
and throwing back across his body. And we've seen – I was listening to Pittman talk about this on his coach's show last week out at the Catfish Hole, and he was talking about a play just during practice. They were – you know, it was some situational type deal where he rolled to his left, and he had a guy like 60-something yards downfield rolling to his left. And I think that might have even been the type of play that he had with Satania the week before at Auburn.
50, yeah, 50
yeah, he basically yard, yeah. said that he's as good as any quarterback he's seen at being able to throw against his body and be accurate on some of those deep throws down the field. Those are the plays where it feels like Arkansas is having the success right now. When the play breaks down and Talen Green can just go out and kind of be the schoolyard quarterback and use his athleticism – It's when he has to stand in the pocket, that's where things are not going well. And you would have to think that, you know, now with it happening against Auburn and it happening against Texas A&M, and now you're going to see maybe the best defensive line you're going to see all season in the regular season.
Yeah, Tennessee's very good.
It'll be interesting to see what they do Saturday night, because you can't just keep doing the things the same way and expecting a different result. They're going to have to get creative, I feel like, with Green in order for him to have success in the passing game.
No, 100%. And then something else I think that's kind of an interesting thing and kind of a red flag is they just don't seem to have confidence in the kicking game. I don't know why they would have attempted a fake field goal in that situation. And I know the final margin ended up being a 4-point margin. So
it cost them a timeout.
But they were ill prepared for what happened at that time. They didn't know whether they wanted to kick a field goal. They were late in getting guys in. They were running people in off the sideline. For some reason, Armstrong ran in instead of another lineman, another blocker on that edge. So they didn't really know what was going on. It kind of scattered. But then they called a timeout. Well, in the timeout, wouldn't you kind of have a calm answer to what you were going to do? Like, okay, we're going to kick it here, or, you know, whatever. Or maybe punt it. Maybe try to punt them deep. And it seemed like they came out with the worst answer possible.
I've heard coaches say don't ever try a fake field goal out of a timeout.
the other team knows what's coming.
That's when
probably.
The alerts. That's when the antenna are up, and they're looking for that.
Yeah, and it was a disaster.
And who knows if he makes that kick? But it's within his range. It's indoors, and you're at a point in the game where it's 14-14. If he makes that field goal, I think momentum's a big deal.
Right.
And maybe you've got it at that point.
Well, you got to at least have the confidence in the guy to give him a shot, or just tell the guy, hey, we don't feel confident for you anything outside of 40 yards. Just it needs to be one or the other.
Well, he made a 45-yarder later in the game.
Drilled it.
Yep. Defensively, what did you see the other day?
Well, I thought they played exceptional. They held A&M's run game down for the most part. I know Moss had some nice runs on the long drive that they had. For some reason, Arkansas felt like that was the right time of the game to rotate in their backups on that drive. The SEC Defensive Player of the Week on the sideline, not on the field during that drive. And that's where they, other than that, I thought they played well. But I tell you what, I will give Marcel Reed, I will give him props on this. He managed the game very well for A&M. He didn't have big numbers. I think his passing was 50%, so not great. What he did not do was turn the ball over, and he managed the game very well. He ran on occasion when he had to, to kind of keep the chains moving or get a little positive yards. A lot of props to him. And for him being a redshirt freshman, I thought he played with a lot of poise in that game.
Later in today's show, we're going to have Houston Nutt, the former Razorback football coach. He'll be on to talk about this 1999 Tennessee documentary called Redemption that premieres on Hogs Plus. We'll also have an exclusive clip that we'll be able to show you from that documentary here coming up. Also, Anthony Christensen, we'll talk to him about Razorback basketball. John Calipari had just his second press conference since his opening night press conference back in April, the night that he was hired, had some discussion about practice beginning. It begins this week.
Practice.
Over
talking about practice.
Over on campus. You mentioned about having the second team defensive line out there in that critical time. And you go back and you look at the film on that drive. Keavy Rose missed a big tackle in the backfield. Anton Junkaj misses a tackle. Charlie Collins doesn't look like he belongs on the field against an SEC offensive front yet. And that's no... That's no disrespect to him, but he's a true freshman.
Right, right.
He's just not physically ready
for
what he was saying. Somebody else had a missed tackle. Danny Saile. So it wasn't just the fact that they didn't have their top lineman in the game. It's the fact that, Rose makes a great move to get in the backfield, but then what's he do?
He whiffs.
He can't pull down the running back. And these lead to real big plays for Texas A&M on that drive. The more I think about that, the more puzzling it is. And I understand you rotate linemen, but when you've just taken the lead and you got momentum on your side, isn't that when you want your best players
in
the game?
I would think so, yeah, because they had a chance to really kind of put their foot on their throat right there. They had the momentum. Had a very nice drive for the field. That was a very nice drive. Overcame some longs in there, third and longs, and were able to keep the drive going.
It was a long drive, and in the middle of that drive, you've got a change of quarter. There's no reason your first team lineman shouldn't be rested at that point, it feels like.
It's the fifth game of the season. Mm-hmm. If you're not in football shape by the fifth game of the season, what are you doing? So yeah, they should have been fine to go.
You nitpick. But, you have to nitpick all these little decisions that contribute to close losses. I'll guarantee you the coaches are having these same conversations in the building this week. When you lose, you go back on Sunday and you really self-scout yourself and say, what did we do wrong that if we would have made this decision and this decision and this decision, maybe things go our way?
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, after a loss, you're always going to second-guess yourself in every situation. But what's interesting is in 2021, it seemed like every decision that Sam made worked out.
Mostly.
Okay. Yeah,
for the most part.
And now we're 2 years later, 2.5 years later, and we're like, none of the decisions seem like are working out. I know that some are, but it just seems like the biggest ones are not working out.
In 2022, when he was on what I call the rubber chicken circuit, whenever he's going around talking to these different banquets like ours before the season, the Touchdown Club, he kept talking about the 21 Auburn game and how he pressed. He said he felt like he pressed. He went for it on fourth down in the middle of the field when maybe he should have kicked a field goal. They kicked a field goal that was probably a little bit too far outside of Cam Little's range. He just felt like, it was just pressing. And he said that was a game that had really stood out to him and that he was going to learn not to press anymore. And it feels like for the last 3 years, a lot of in-game decisions, whether it be a fake field goal, whether it be a fake punt that worked out. It's been a lot of pressing for Arkansas. I don't know if maybe that's because they feel like they don't have the athletes to keep up with some of the teams that they're playing. Maybe they feel like they need to pull a rabbit out of their hat. But it feels like a lot of pressing for Arkansas that 2 years ago in the preseason, Pittman said, this isn't going to be our team. This isn't going to be our coaching decisions.
Yeah, it seems there's a saying we used to use a lot, paralysis by analysis. Mm. And maybe that's what's happening is that you're hesitant. And Sam's been coaching a long time. He should just go with what is your gut feeling? Go with what your gut tells you to do, and usually you're going to be okay.
It's hard. And then if
it doesn't work out, you go, you know what? That was my gut feeling there. I felt like that's what we needed to do. I own it. It didn't work out. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to try it again.
What do they call it? What are coaches called in baseball? Managers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what head coaches ought to be called. They are managers. Yeah. It's all about how you manage the game. It's all those little decisions that make the difference between, you know, 7-5 and 5-7 or 8-4 and 4-8.
Did you feel like they gave up on the run game a little bit Saturday too?
Well, I think they were, number one, you know, they're banged up at tight end. Luke has actually been a pretty good run blocker for him this year. They're banged up at tight end. I don't know how much that contributed to it because he wasn't the only one who was hurt. JaQuindon Jackson was in and out.
He only had 10 carries Saturday. I think he
was banged up.
Okay.
DeBenyon was suspended. They said they lost a running back early in the game. I'm not sure if he's talking about Braylon Russell or Rodney Hill.
It was Hill. Yeah, Hill. He kind of got bent backward. He had a run and maybe got bent, his leg got bent in or bent backward, okay, or something. Looked like maybe an ankle or something.
So I don't know how much all of that personnel, you know, stuff went into. But yeah, I mean, it seems like this team gets kind of pass happy at times, which surprises me because the passing really isn't that effective with this team. I mean, you take away the one big 75-yard pass play, and it was pretty pedestrian passing stats.
Yeah, he and you know, Green didn't have any real explosive plays like he is capable of. No, I can't remember a single one other than the long pass. I mean, no big runs. He didn't have any big runs. It just seemed to me like they got away from the run game a little bit maybe, and maybe they kind of gave up on it. And if I looked at the stat sheet, and I see JaQuindon Jackson with 10 carries, he needs to have about 18 to 20 carries.
There's some concern this week about how banged up Arkansas is. Pittman talked about, especially on offense, they've got a lot of injuries that they're dealing with this week. They're trying to get to the bye week, and they're playing a team that's more talented that just came off of a bye week of its own.
Right.
It feels like this is an uphill climb for Arkansas on Saturday.
So what you're calling the upsets, what you're saying?
I didn't call the upset.
It was funny.
The opposite is true.
You and I were talking a while ago off air. I moved to Arkansas in 1999, went to the Tennessee game as just a fan. When I was down in Fort Smith, at the sports editor of that paper down there, we used to get a couple of tickets for every game. And so my wife and I came up here for that game, the Tennessee game, and it was a wild and crazy crowd. And I remember the big win and the tearing the goalpost down and taking it down. You know,
you were on top of the upright, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would be awesome to have something like that Saturday. And who knows? I mean, maybe the cards fall right. And I watched some of the Tennessee game with Oklahoma, and Tennessee's defensive front is impressive, but nothing about them tells me that they're miles ahead of everybody else.
See, I think they're underrated. I think their defensive front's very underrated.
It's very good. I mean,
very underrated. So much of the focus on Tennessee is on their offense. I think their defensive front may be the strength of that football team.
Well, Oklahoma switched quarterbacks in that game, and they went, and I cannot think of the quarterback.
Hawkins, who came in for Jackson Arnold.
Okay, so Hawkins had a lot of success as, you know, running against they may have been running for his life, but he was had a lot of success running in that game, listening to the game on my way. I'd been at Van Buren, just come back home and listen to it, and he seemed to have a lot of success running the ball. So maybe there's something there that Bobby Petrino can pick up on, and maybe you see Green keep the ball and run the ball more this week.
Be interesting to see how they play it this weekend, Arkansas and Tennessee. It's going to be a 6:30 kickoff Saturday night over at Razorback Stadium. We want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Gives you complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com, plus 20 issues of Hogs Illustrated magazine each year. Our basketball preview is coming out this week. We think you'll want to see that. I saw a proof of it the other day. It looks really good. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509, 479-684-5509 to subscribe to Hogs Illustrated. When we come back, Anthony Christensen will be on the desk with me, and we'll go over what John Calipari had to say at his press conference previewing the start of Razorback preseason basketball practice. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. Anthony Christensen here on desk. We'll talk about Arkansas basketball coach John Calipari. That still feels interesting, doesn't it, to say Arkansas basketball coach John Calipari and what he had to say about the Razorbacks preseason practice here in just a moment. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. John Calipari spoke to the media this morning. We got a couple of clips to play from him. Here's what he had to say about Arkansas playing Kansas and TCU in the preseason and exhibition games.
Probably going to get stung pretty good, but it's perfect for us to figure out where we are right now. For our fans to see where we are, the staff, everyone has an idea of where we are right now, and that we got work to do, that I've never promised to have a magic wand. My teams usually at the beginning of the year will struggle some, and by the end of the year, we're playing at our best. I imagine that'll be the same.
So there's John Calipari there with the Tyson logos right behind him, very appropriately placed, I would say. Anthony, you're over there this morning. I tell you, I haven't had a chance to listen to all of this, so you're going to help fill me in, too. I did get to listen to some of it, though. He is long-winded. A 7.5-minute opening statement, and then he likes to hold court when he gets in these press conference areas. I think it was like about a 46-minute press conference, right?
Yeah, no, he can yap. no, but, I mean, it's always – I mean, you know, he can carry a room, obviously, draws all the attention. He is a captivating talker as well, so and he gives good quotes. So, I mean, that helps me in my job, right? So, but, yes, he can talk.
So he talked about his staff a lot, and we've heard him talk about Kenny Payne. We've heard him talk about Chen Coleman, about the others who he's brought with him from Kentucky. But it was today the first time that we've had a chance to hear him talk about Tyler Ulis, who has been hired as the fifth assistant to the staff, former player for him at Kentucky. What was it that he likes about Ulis that he can bring to the staff?
Yeah, no, I asked him about Tyler Ulis and everything, just – you know, why he decided to bring him, because he was a graduate assistant at Kentucky as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of talked about how when he first watched him, he was like, this guy's too small. And then just kind of kept getting to watch him and was like, you know what, if you're good enough, you're big enough. And kind of talked about how, you know, he saw, you know, his kind of, you know, as cliche as it is, just his player coach or coach on the court kind of, you know, mindset and everything that he has as a point guard. And really kind of took a lot of his suggestions to heart when he was playing at Kentucky. And then obviously when his playing career in the NBA was cut short due to injury, you know, that was like one of the things that he wanted to do, was kind of bring him back because of his kind of knack for coaching and just, you know, his ability to, I guess, connect with players. Obviously, he's a younger guy and all of that stuff. But, yeah, it was an interesting little, I guess, talking point.
Practice begins Wednesday, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the rule is that you can begin practice 6 weeks before your first game, and if that's the case, their first game is supposed to be against Lipscomb on November the 6th. The schedule has not been released, but we know the schedule. My guess is that they're just waiting maybe for a contract or two, you know, a couple of I's dotted, a couple of T's crossed, and, mm-hmm. and they'll have that pushed out. We know what the schedule looks like. Starts with Lipscomb, second game in Baylor, mm-hmm. or against Baylor at American Airlines Center in Dallas. Even though KU and TCU do not count against the record, that's quite the opening stretch that they're going to play there over a couple of weeks, where they play KU on a Friday night at Bud Walton. They'll play TCU on a Friday night at Dickey's Arena in downtown Fort Worth. They'll come back, open the season against Lipscomb, and then they'll go back to Dallas for a game you know, at American Airlines Center against Baylor. What did he have to say about the schedule and why he put the schedule the way he did?
Yeah, it's kind of a baptism of fire, right? You know, putting it that way. I mean, Lipscomb is a very good team. I don't want people to, you know, look at that and just say, oh, they scheduled to win their opener. I mean, they should win that game. Don't get me wrong. But he did mention, you know, scheduling Lipscomb for that opener. He mentioned that he thinks Lenny Acuff is one of the, you know, top up and coming coaches in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's also kind of something I agree with as well.
They gave Arkansas a scare last time they played.
Yes. No, I mean, so Lipscomb's a very, you know, capable team. Lenny Acuffs has them, you know, well-coached every year, and they're always kind of challenging for a conference title and everything along those lines. But, you know, he, like he mentioned in the, I guess, the clip that we just played, you know, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get stung early. You're going to learn a lot about this team very quickly. And he talked about how, you know, sometimes he, or how he feels his team's always, you know, finish better than they start, and you're going to learn a lot about, you know, how good they are real quick. Obviously, I mean, you know, exhibitions, you're not going to show your full hand, mm-hmm. you know, every time you're playing against, you know, no matter who you're playing against in an exhibition. It's just a good opportunity to see your guys go up against different teams, and playing against a team like TCU and a team like Kansas, who I'm going to release my own little preseason top 25 on Friday. I've got Kansas at number two, a little spoiler alert. But I mean, those are two very good teams, and you're going to, you know, be challenged. You're going to see them, you know, struggle probably a little bit against some of these teams. And, you know, obviously don't put all of your stock into a preseason exhibition. I guess you guys probably learned last year's before my time, but they beat Purdue in that, in that exhibition. But, and obviously the season turned out the way it did, but, you know, there's a lot to look forward to with that opening slate.
Well, there was also a year where they lost to Texas by 30 in an exhibition game down at the Moody Center, and that team ends up going to the Sweet 16. So the exhibitions, you just never know how those are going to work out. Kansas, by the way, they're ranked number two in the Blue Ribbon Report that is out. I didn't realize they had Hunter Dickinson back.
I thought
his eligibility had expired last year. That's
one more year.
I think he's one of the best players in college basketball.
I do too. You know, he's obviously is a force inside, good on the boards. I mean, he's just good, right? Maybe not the quintessential NBA big as we kind of have come to know, especially in recent years, but, you know, kind of perfect for the modern college game. He's got the experience you need, and, you know, he's going to really be an anchor for a good Kansas team.
Arkansas is going to go down to Hot Springs and Pine Bluff next week to have really not sure what this is going to look like, to be honest with you, but it looks like it's basically kind of like a glorified practice that they're going to have at those two towns. He was asked by Bob Holt about beginning teamwork, basically how they had worked on a lot of individual work throughout the summer, and now they're having some, you know, working on five-man concepts, and this is what Calipari had to say.
The summer was total development of players, and we really didn't do much of that team stuff. So now, first of all, when you talk defense, you're not only individually, you're talking team. And then team play is how do we make each other better? Some of that is how do we play for this team to be at its best? We're going to play fast. We're going to be unselfish. But how do you get into playing fast?
There he had some comments about teamwork. You can hear the entire press conference, by the way, over at our website, wholehogsports.com. We'll have plenty of content from Calipari's press conference as the day unfolds. You were telling me earlier that he mentioned DJ Wagner quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy he has high expectations for. Obviously now a year of college basketball under his belt. You know, played a lot of last season through injuries, missed some time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Still averaged almost 10 points. Was a good, you know, point guard for them last year. And he said, like, I'm expecting a lot out of him. He's mentioned that he, you know, he's a leader on the court. He said, I think the exact quote was, when you walk in my gym, his voice is the one you hear. So he's somebody, you know, I'm expecting probably to be that starting point guard, this season. And not that, you know, starting roles are really that big or that important in, you know, modern college basketball, just because of how much guys rotate and everything along those lines. But I mean, I'm expecting to see him have a big role just because of how much he, you know, mentioned.
I was interested to hear his comments about why he's taking the team on the road to Hot Springs, to Pine Bluff. You know, he had an event earlier this year where he took, like a one-day camp to Russellville. And so this is all part of kind of an outreach on his part to take the players out to the rest of the state of Arkansas. It's kind of like the War Memorial Stadium equivalent to Razorback basketball.
Yeah, basically that. He said, I think that the exact quote was, you know, this is the state's program. This program is, you know, belongs to the state or something along those lines. So it's really just a lot of you know, getting people out there, making sure, you know, he's connecting with, you know, like you mentioned, people in Pine Bluff or people in Little Rock, like they're going to have the game in North Little Rock, or people in Hot Springs. You know, he was just in Hot Springs for the coaching clinic. So it's a lot of, you know, connecting, making sure you're building that, I guess, that bridge, not just in Fayetteville and Northwest Arkansas, but, you know, the rest of the state as well.
Of course, Arkansas basketball, they used to go to not Hot Springs so much, but Pine Bluff. They used to go there quite a bit. One of the great wins in program history is beating North Carolina at the old convention center. You said that he also had some comments about NIL and facilities and, I don't know if maintenance is the right word, or renovations, but you know, Juracek spoke to us at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club last week, and he said that basically Bud Walton Arena renovation has been put on the side burner, not the back burner, but the side burner. And that, you know, it's not as imminent as it felt, say, this time a year ago. I ask if NIL slows down the renovation, not just to the basketball arena, but, you know, they've got a softball renovation that's planned. They've got a soccer renovation that's planned. And he said, yeah, he said that's certainly a piece that, you know, that's part of the equation now. What did Calipari have to say about renovations and NIL?
Kind of a lot of the same things, just kind of that is kind of the focal point, I guess, is the right framing to use. He also mentioned that, you know, in terms of, you know, facilities for him and the team, that he doesn't really see that as like a pressing issue for them at the moment, just because, you know, he feels that they're in a good spot. But, yeah, he did mention that, you know, NIL, making sure that has, you know, structure and is in place is kind of, you know, I guess a main priority for the athletics department. Whereas, you know, not that long ago, it would be, you know, kind of this facilities arms race that, you know, is kind of at the top of college athletics.
When I left the games last year, especially against Duke, but Purdue similar, I left asking myself, why would you ever want to change this? Why would you want to mess with this atmosphere that gives you such a distinct home court advantage? Because what they've got in the plans to do at Bud Walton, assuming they go through with it at some point, is going to turn Bud Walton Arena into more of an NBA-style arena, where, and I understand that you've got to have the money to do the things that you want to do, and that Bud Walton Arena, as it exists right now, probably has you know, capped the amount of revenue it can produce. But if the ultimate goal is to put a winning team on the floor and the atmosphere and the environment play a clear role in that, I just wonder why you'd want to mess with that. Because we've been in NBA arenas. The vibe in an NBA arena is totally different than what you get in one of these old-school college arenas like Bud Walton. And I would take it a step further and say, even though a place like Auburn is a really good environment, you know, there's that catering to the premium seating at Auburn. At Ole Miss, it's that way too. That the Moody Center is that way at Texas. They win, but the atmosphere in those buildings just doesn't feel like what you feel in a place like Bud Walton.
Yeah, and I mean, he mentioned also, you know, that you know, even, you know, as we're talking about renovations and stuff, he said, you know, Bud Walton is still a lot better than a lot of places in the SEC. So, you know, obviously, you know, I don't think he's all that concerned about, you know, renovations being top of mind. At least that's my kind of take from it. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, no, I think he's quite content with how things are.
I don't think he makes that decision, but I think he probably has a bigger say in that decision than Eric Musselman did. That's just my two cents.
I would probably agree
about
with that.
About how the renovation goes forward.
I mean, the
renovation is going to outlast the AD, the board of trustees, the coach. Obviously, Bud Walton Arena is going to be around for a long time, but I do think Calipari will have a big say in that. Real quick before we let you go, you're also our soccer reporter. They've got the number one team in the country. They're just beating up on everybody. And I mentioned this yesterday, South Carolina, who's a good program, came in here last weekend and they lose 2-0. I don't know that I've ever seen a quality team not be able to get one shot on goal.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of like we've, you know, been on here a couple of times. You know, the attack that Arkansas has is the what, you know, people are going to look at just because, you know, people like, you know, the shiny things, the goals. But I mean, this defense is really, really good. I mean, 3 shutouts, clean sheets, however you want to put it, in 4 SEC games. And then the one that wasn't was, you know, an 8-2 win against Missouri. And, you know, Colby Hale was not happy with how the second half came out and played it. And, yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, they're good all over the field. They can attack in a lot of different ways. I mean, they can possess, they can go direct. I mean, it's a lot of different ways they can play.
What's the feeling over there right now, being the number one ranked team, playing as well as they're playing? You're over there quite a bit, but what's the vibe that you get around that program right now?
They seem to be enjoying themselves. I mean, I know, you know, Colby Hale's not exactly a big rankings guy, so he, you know, doesn't necessarily, you know, really like to look at that. He kind of just wants to keep them motivated, keep them focused, and not allow complacency to set in. But, you know, I was at their practice this morning before Calipari's press conference, and, you know, they look good. I mean, they were possessing the ball really well. And, I mean, they seem to be enjoying their soccer, which is also, you know, confidence is a big thing in the sport of soccer.
And they've got a
experience.
And they've got a big game coming up Friday night against Mississippi State, another top 10 team.
Yes, no, that'll be a lot of fun. I talked to Colby a little bit about that. I mean, they're good. I mean, it's going to be a fun environment down there in Starkville. I almost said Stockholm, not Sweden.
a little bit different,
yes,
Starkville,
yeah.
Mississippi.
Yeah, it's all, you know, two sides of the same coin. Not really. But no, it'll be a fun game. I mean, 2 very good teams. I mean, you know, Mississippi State's a tough team to break down. They can hit you on the break as well. It'll be a good game for sure.
Anthony, we appreciate your time. When we come back, we'll have a clip from the Redemption documentary that's premiering on Hogs Plus tonight, and then we'll talk with Houston Nutt, the former Razorback football coach who is featured in the documentary, about what that game meant. We'll talk to him a little bit about this year's football team as well. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We'll get to Houston Nutt here in just a moment. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Tonight on Hogs Plus, they are going to premiere their new documentary called Redemption. It's a story of the Razorbacks' 1999 victory over Tennessee. It's mostly about that game, but it also includes a lot of the story about the 1999 team. And now we've got a clip to show you from that documentary. will think you'll enjoy this. This is a fan who has a piece of the goalpost meeting Clint Sterner before a game in 2022.
What's going on, man? Oh, come on, man. Come on, man. Red, I'm Clint. Good to see you. Aiden? Abe, I got it, man. Nice to meet you, buddy. Night, get out of here, man. This is cool, man. Have you watched the game when this happened?
I showed him some highlights.
Well, one of these, when you get a little bit older, man, you'll watch it through a different lens, and it'll be really cool, man.
So how's it feel winning that game after the redemption game?
Oh, man, how much time you got? What time's kickoff? No, look, man, it was unbelievable for me. I mean, obviously, sure, from a personal perspective. The cool thing about it is I really do believe that the fan base can understand kind of how it felt for me, too.
Oh, I mean,
everybody lived it. I think everybody lived it with me. Now, I had to deal with it personally, but I think the fan base had to deal with it from a perspective of it's our team. You know, we lost something, and now we got to listen to all this crap, you know. And when this happened, I think it was really indicative of, you know, the fan base living that year with me.
Right. Yeah, I would
fill in this moment with me, man.
I can't tell
you how cool this is, man. Something so simple.
Isn't it hilarious?
Something so simple, I mean, stands for so much. It's cool, man.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Would you mind signing it for
me? Absolutely not. It'd be my honor, man. You know what? You want me to draw the play on here?
Do it. That'd be awesome.
I know that play. It's Race. So there's a tight end here. And there was one that he was actually on the ball here. When I called for him to back off, he backed off like this. And we had two receivers out here. Everybody blocked, because them big boys got to take care of the quarterback, you know what I mean? We had pass 26, which is a run play this way. Came out, faked it to him. I set up deep back here, right? This running back, he joined the offensive line, he started protecting. And these wide receivers ran unbelievable routes here. Called a double post concept, right? He ran across the field, and this Anthony Lucas, my guy, deep post, just like that. And we just threw it over here like this. Bang. Touchdown, Arkansas.
And thanks to our friends over at Hogs Plus for that clip from the Redemption documentary that premieres tonight on Hogs Plus. We're joined now by former Razorback football coach Houston Nutt. Coach, I know you've seen the documentary. What are your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. It brings back so many unbelievable memories. And that bond, you know, just it seems like that's not going to ever go away. And it's so well done, you know, from Resurgence was awesome. And now Redemption, just unbelievable, you know, the job that they did. And boy, you just think about the players and their heart and their passion and how hard they played. It's just a beautiful thing.
You know, that win against Tennessee, it did so many things laying the groundwork for what I still think is relevant to Razorback football today. You don't get the south end zone maybe without that win. You don't get the north end zone expansion without all of the, you know, just that groundswell of support that came from beating Tennessee that day. It was really an historic win for your program.
Well, you're right. And you said something that's so true, because I remember Coach Rolls. He was so adamant about that new stadium, and it originally he wanted 100,000, and I'm glad I could talk him out of that. I didn't want 100. He says, why not? I said, Coach, I love when they're holding up two fingers, three fingers, four fingers for this 55,000 seat stadium. Oh, they'll come. And you know, and then the very first week before the first game, he came to my office. Clarinda says, hey, Coach Sproles is here. And he walks in and says, I told you, we are sold out. 72,500. He was so excited, you know, with the suites and all that. But it goes back to that win that was really a historic win and really precious to a lot of people because, you know, it's the same score as the previous year, you know, 28-24. There's so many things that you look at. Clint Sterner, you know, carrying that burden really, and he shouldn't have all by himself. And then to come back and get that victory, just it ignited everything.
Well, I remember about that game, Coach, is just how electric Fayetteville was that day. And just kind of take us through your point of view that day and maybe leading up to the game and then the celebration that night.
Yeah. Well, I could tell by practice during the week. I said, man, I told our staff, see, these guys are just so focused, you know, and And it's just they it's almost like they were waiting on this one. They were waiting on this. And I remember the preparation was so good. But then when we got to the stadium on game day, we've never seen so many people to greet us when we get there 2 hours before. They were there, and they were ready. And they played every play from the moment the band walked on the field to get the A going. They were in it, and they helped us. Well, they helped us on every play. It was electric, as you said. And then when David Barrett intercepted the ball, you just had this feeling, this is going to be our day today, and we're not going to let this one slide. And so that was kind of the mindset, and it's just, well, the atmosphere, beautiful, beautiful day, packed house, and there's nothing like, you know, 72-5 calling the Hogs, you know, and it seems like every other five-minute period they were calling them. And then the celebration. The celebration afterwards was something that we'll never forget, because everybody was on the field. I looked, I couldn't believe 3-2-1, and it seemed like just all of a sudden I blinked and looked up. I said, "Golly, the field's gone."
Mm-hmm.
And then you add to it the goalpost. They took it down and took it to Dixon, and it's just there's so many stories that still go along with that. It's just, it's amazing.
In the documentary, you said you turned to your wife. You had four small children at the time. You said you got to get them out of here.
Yeah. Got to. You got to. That's the only thing I was worried. I said, they're on top of the goalpost. They're on top of the goalpost, Donna. I said, they're swaying it. We got to make sure they're away. I think we're around the 20-yard line, so we moved away. And I'll tell you, man, it was just, it was unbelievable. It was great.
Is it hard to believe it's been 25 years?
Oh, my gosh, it's hard. Really hard to believe. And you had to think about it, because I was thinking when this first came out, I went back and counted the years. I said, wait a minute now. Is that really 25? And every bit of it, 25. So some days it feels like yesterday, but most of the time it doesn't. I said, that just can't be possible.
I think it's hard for people nowadays who maybe didn't, you know, like say younger people who didn't, you know, they weren't watching Razorback football at that time, to realize how big of a deal it was when you played Tennessee, because you played them every year. It wasn't a division game, but it was, I mean, it might as well have been, because you saw them every year.
Oh, yeah, they had such great teams, and they, you know, they had tradition. You know, Rocky Top, that Coliseum, when it's rocking now, that 100,000-seat stadium, it's tough. It's a tough, tough environment. And, you know, when the defending champions were coming back to Fayetteville, I tell you what, man, we knew they were in town, and we were ready for them. And you know, they had a little, probably 10,000 of Orange people too, you know, that traveled.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a tremendous atmosphere.
There's a clip in the documentary of you telling your team in the locker room at Neyland Stadium in 98, you said, we're going to see them again. I would assume in the moment you were probably talking about maybe at the SEC championship game, and then it didn't work out where you got to see them. Was that the case? Were you thinking you were going to see them again a few weeks later?
Oh, there ain't no question about it. I was thinking one thing and one thing only. We're going to see them again. And I was thinking in two or three weeks, after LSU, I'm thinking championship game in Atlanta. And our players did too. And that was tough. Losing the Mississippi State game, didn't realize, you know, it was a huge hangover. And I remember cutting practice to try to get everything back as far as energy wise, but that was a lot of emotion used on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought their guts out, you know, we fought our guts out and, you know, had a chance, but Coach Sherrill then pulled it out there at the end.
You know, a lot of people think about that Mississippi State game in 1998. I think about the Mississippi State game in 99, because you had to turn around and play them in Little Rock the week after you had the win over Tennessee. And that was a real emotional comeback win for your team too, over a Mississippi State team that I think was ranked top 10, 15 at the time.
Oh, that's a great point. No doubt about it. Very tough. Coach Sherrill put together some real athletes, and that was a tough game, man. Tough physical game. And Little Rock was a tremendous atmosphere as well. Now,
one of the themes of the film is about Brandon Burlsworth's death during the spring between 98 and the 99 seasons, and how much that galvanized the team. Just kind of speak to that. Not only his death, but also, you know, it seemed like the team really rallied around Clint too, and everything that he was having to go through at the time.
Right. Well, you know, we all know Brandon was, you know, just an elite player and, you know, a special guy that always did things the right way. And when that tragic death, when it happened, man, it was just something that's hard to comprehend, you know. And, you know, the one thing you knew is the bond Grant Garrett and Clint Sterner, Anthony Lucas, all these guys had was that connection with Brandon. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to do it the Burroughs way, wanted to do it for him and finish what we didn't finish the previous year, especially that one game, Tennessee. And so that's where, to me, if you look closely at the end of the game, Clint Sterner, he's pointing to the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And there ain't one thing on his mind. Hey, Brandon, buddy, that one's right there for you. So it's pretty neat. Pretty neat deal.
I think it's a 51, 52-minute documentary, and it holds your attention for the entire 51, 52 minutes. That's what jumped out to me.
Absolutely. And I'm partial to it because we lived it. But I think it's so well done. And, you know, you don't want to go get up and get any popcorn anytime during unless you stop it, because it's to me, you're on the edge of your seat.
Redemption premieres tonight on HogsPlus.com. Houston, thoughts on this year's Arkansas team from what you've been able to watch from them on TV?
You know, I had a couple of my players get inducted at Oklahoma State when I was an assistant there, and I went to the Stillwater game, and I was really impressed because that's the first time I've seen them since the previous year, and I thought Coach Pittman really improved the team. If you looked at the offensive line, you looked at the defense, the way they were playing, I said, man, they improved. And I was really sick to my stomach on the Oklahoma State game because I thought Arkansas outplayed them and really should have won the game. And I really believe there's just a few things. Of course, you know, turnovers are a killer and you get the ball. But, you know, our running game, that 22 is really a good back. And I just feel like he can take some pressure off of our quarterback, Talon Green, who's very athletic. He can make things happen. But you know, passing the ball 40 times or so, you know, that always worried me, you know, when you're in those games that are really tight and when a quarterback like that is more – he's more where you move the launching points, you know, where you boot and waggle him. To me, he's excited. He can escape. And then just like the first play at the A&M game, I mean, absolutely perfect throw.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, that's the way to start that game. It's 7-0. But those are the games, you know, you just got to finish, you know, and it's just the little things. And I know Coach Pittman's, you know, surely harping real hard on little things with penalties and taking care of the ball and those things, because you're right there. And really, when you look up, going into A&M, probably could have been 4-0. And so, you know, it's a lot of football still left. And I think, to answer your question, I just think they've improved from last year as far as the personnel and different spots. It's just, as you know, it's just a fine line between winning and losing. You just got to get over that hump.
There's so much focus right now on the fact that Arkansas is having struggle in these one possession games. And I've always felt like once you finally get that win, it's like taking the lid off, and the rest, it's easier to get those. But it's hard to get that first one. I wonder, just kind of being in that situation as a coach, being in that locker room, what do you think it's like right now? Is there still trying to find the way to get over that hump?
Yeah. Well, it's the only dose of medicine that's good on a time like this is a W. It's a win. I hadn't had a team in 13 years, but I can tell you this, the most biggest thing I miss is a together when you say, hey, we did it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're looking for. And so it's tough. It's tough when, at the end of the deal, when you look at it, hey, you lost. And now you got to come right back and play a great football team. And so how quick can you put it away and say, hey, new day, we get to go again. And they got to come here. And y'all know what can happen now. Y'all know what can happen in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's been proven. You take care of the ball. You get a turnover. Don't give them a turnover. You keep the ball. When we got the ball, they can't score. And all of a sudden, you look up and you got it to the fourth quarter. Then they get a little nervous. And some, to me, that's got to be the mindset. And, you know, it can happen. It can happen. You just got to keep believing, because when you keep believing, that's when you're going to start achieving.
Is it easier when you have a disappointing loss to turn around and play a big-name team like Tennessee? Because I feel like there's a little bit of a parallel between the 99 game and this game. You guys lost to Ole Miss the week before. You turn around, you play third-ranked Tennessee. They lose last week. They play around and play fourth-ranked Vols.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is focus. There is a sense of urgency. And we always wanted to play really, really good at home. You know, that's the one thing. When we come through that, hey, this is our home, this is our backyard, and there's got to be a little respect there. And the only way you get respect is there's got to be real collisions, and there's got to be a real sense of execution, everybody taking care of their job, and little things. And, hey, don't look up at the scoreboard until the fourth quarter. You just tell them, don't. Hey, I got the scoreboard. You worry about this play. You play your best this play. Beat that guy across from you each play, one play at a time. And I think you're right, though. I think you do have a little more sense of urgency when you're coming off a defeat, and especially when nobody gives you a chance. I always liked it when nobody gives a chance. Like, nobody thinks you're going to beat Tennessee. Nobody thinks you're going to beat LSU or Alabama. And then, okay, good. That's the way we want them to think. And then all of a sudden, you know, they come in there and they just – flop around. They thought they could roll their helmets, just roll them out there, and all of a sudden there's a game going on. And so that's, to me, what the SEC is about.
Real quick, before we get you out of here, I want to ask you about one of your former players. I know you're real close with Rhett Lashley. You go down to his games at SMU some. Just your thoughts on what he's been able to do with that program this year. They look like they're off to a great start.
He's done a great job. He's really done a great job with getting a really good staff, recruiting, and really keeping everybody together. And but he's really hit the right buttons. I've been really proud of him. Done a great job. That's a big win last week, beat Florida State. And of course, they're in the ACC, and you know, they're in a different environment and playing some teams they're not used to playing. So that's not easy. And he's doing a great job.
How much getting let go by Auburn when he did? How much of that reset do you think just has kind of fueled what he's been able to do since then?
Oh, anytime, you know, if you get let go, there's a fire burning. And he's in the right spot now. He's in the right spot and kept working. And him and I remember him and JB Grimes were even at UConn at one time, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that wouldn't want that job, but boy, they went to work, did a good job there. And so you just keep working, keep building, and like you tell your players, you know, every day, hey, one day at a time, and buckle up.
It's always fun seeing local guys go out and do well for themselves.
Yeah. No question about that.
Been a lot of fun watching his teams. Houston, we appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you. Houston Nutt, the Redemption documentary premieres tonight on Hogs Plus. You'll want to see that one. And we appreciate you being with us here today on our podcast. Hope you'll join us at wholehogsports.com until our Wednesday podcast. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.